Hello and welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. My name is Carl Ojachowski, and I'll be taking you through the next hour on today's show. I'm really excited to be hosting today. I don't come around the studio very often, but when I do, it always seems to be a special occasion, and today is no exception. On today's program, we will be speaking with Tim Holland, aka Soul. Tim is a longtime rapper from the Bay Area, now from Denver. He was a former member of the Anticon Collective, and he is also a vegan and talks about animal rights in his raps. We've wanted to have him on the show for a very, very long time, and today we're finally going to do that. To say that Tim has been an influence on my own work and on myself as an artist, as well as a vegan, would be an understatement. I have lots of questions to ask him, and I'm really, really stoked that he's here today. Tim says that this is actually the first time that anyone's ever interviewed him about animal rights stuff, so I'm really honored to be able to do this. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I was just actually telling the listeners that you were telling me this is the first time that you've ever been interviewed about animal rights stuff, and I'm really surprised by that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it, I mean, it's trivialized. You know, it's more of like a lifestyle consumer choice than an ethical dilemma for a lot of people, I think. And I think with, you know, everything happening with the economy and the wars, I think a lot of people just have put animal rights on the back burner for a long time.
Yeah, you know, in your song, My Veganism, that's out on your new album, No Wising Up, No Settling Down, you say that you've been vegetarian for 24 years. So I wanted to start, we often start by asking our guests, what got them into animal rights or vegetarianism or veganism in the first place? So maybe if you want to take the listeners through, you know, how you started out as a vegetarian and then later how you became vegan.
I mean, I don't think it was any one thing, but there was a bunch of things that happened. I guess when I was a little kid, you know, we always had dogs and hamsters and mice and stuff, and we just, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, so we would go to the woods and hunt for frogs and turtles, and, you know, I just grew up around a lot of animals, and I always loved them. And, I don't know, reading the book Charlotte's Web had a huge impact on me when I was a kid. And I don't know, first I found out how hot dogs are made, and I was like, oh, that's my favorite food. Then I started finding out all my favorite food was, like, the meat that gets, you know, round up off the bottom of the butcher. And then I found out, I started picking veins out of all my food. It was disgusting to me. And I don't know, then one day I was, like, at a dinner table, and my father was eating this chicken, and this huge vein just fell out of his mouth and was, like, hanging down his chin, and he just slurped it up, and I just started cussing at him. And I was, like, 11 at the time, and my family just was like, what's wrong with you? And I couldn't think of any response, and I was like, I'm a vegetarian now, don't you know? And that was it. So I think it's either my dad or Charlotte's Web.
So you had the don't you know I'm vegetarian moment, and then how did it later turn into veganism?
You know, I don't know, my wife now, my girlfriend then, she moved in with me. I've always had allergies, and I've always raised a lot of mucus and phlegm, and it used to be really hard for me to, like, record. I would literally have to have hot tea and just spend all that time, like, hucking Louis and clearing my throat, because I just would constantly be raising phlegm, because as a vegetarian, the biggest aspect of my diet was, like, cheese, and I never correlated the two. But then one day, my girlfriend moved in with me, and she had just gone vegan, and we just started eating vegan, and then, you know, I did it more out of solidarity, and then I realized that my allergies were better, I could breathe better, my asthma wasn't so bad, I was raising about a third or a quarter of the amount of phlegm, and so it made me a better rapper. So I just decided, you know, and I wasn't, like, tied to it. So when she moved out that summer to go back to college, I went to my favorite pizza place in Oakland and got a pizza, and I was disgusted by it, and I was like, oh. So, yeah, so from there I just stayed vegan. I guess I've been vegan for about 12 years now.
Wow. Your rapping style has always struck me as this kind of, I mean, it's changed a lot in the last few years, but especially on, you know, some of the first records, it's this very rapid fire kind of delivery, and you're almost kind of gasping at times for breaths, and it's a unique style. And I'm wondering if, you know, we've talked about how you went vegetarian, so maybe we can talk about how you started rapping and what was the inspiration for that.
You know, I don't know. I was just this kid in Maine. I was watching, I remember I was like 6 or 7, and I was watching some movie, and there was rap music playing in the background. And it was just, you know, it was like somebody's been like, I'm dropping my science. And I was like, oh, that sounds smart, you know? And I liked the way the words sounded, and I don't know. And then from there, I just went and bought Fat Boys and Run DMC and Beastie Boys. And I don't know. And then somewhere, I guess around the time when I was like 10 or 11, I figured out how I could make tape loops by like rewinding and recording my favorite beats. And so I started making like these tape loops on my tape deck, you know, like dubbing, pausing, letting the beat play, boom, chicka boom, pause, rewind, boom, chicka boom. And then we would go over to my friend's karaoke machine and record these demos. And then, I don't know, and then like there's a DJ down the street from me who was like the big hip-hop DJ, and he was like friends with DJ Premier and Gangstar and all these people. So I just knocked on his door one day and just started rapping for him. And he was just like, who are these 13-year-old white kids in 1991, you know, rapping on my lawn? This is the cutest thing. Like, come on in, you know? And so, I don't know, like, I think a lot of, like, hip-hop DJ, you know, older black men that were in Portland, Maine at the time, they got a real kick out of me. And so they kind of took me under their wing, and I'd help with radio shows, and I just got really, I was at the right place at the right time, like way ahead of the curve.
Speaking of ahead of the curve, the work that a lot of people probably got introduced to you through was your early stuff on Anticon Records. And I know some people might be familiar with the story of Anticon, but maybe you want to take us through how that sort of formed and you ended up relocating, I believe, to the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anticon Records, like I mean, for me, it, like the next step in the story of me as a youth goes to eventually out of all of those like weird demo stuff, Jermaine Dupri heard my demo and wanted to sign me, and it was like really almost happened. And then it didn't happen, and I didn't understand why it didn't happen. And so I kind of like got very bitter about record labels, and you know, they were trying to make me work with producers. Like they wanted me to have Jermaine Dupri produce it, and I wanted beats from Gangstar. And so at that point, there was like a lot of indie hip hop coming out that wasn't quite indie hip hop. It was like Black Moon, and there was like this Moot and Raz Kaz, and there was like this movement around '94. Of independent hip-hop coming up. And I was very inspired by that, and I liked the ideas of Cruise. And so we had this online radio show and website called TrueHipHop.com, and we were one of the first online hip-hop, underground hip-hop magazines, and we would pull in music from all over the world that we would get through these tape trades. So we'd be like sharing Subutones and Shapeshifters and all these groups no one had ever heard of. And then from there, it made logical sense for us to bring all those artists together under the banner of Anticon. And everybody was down. And because I had like a lot of connections in the music industry that I've been like building up since I was 15, like I knew how to run a label. And so we started this record label. And originally it was just my record company that I started with Pedestrian that we did together. And you know, the idea of it was always to be more of a co-op or like a collective. And so at one point I realized, you know, my dynamics with my friends were being altered by being the boss of a record label. Mm. So we made it a collective. We made it so that all the artists would own equally in it. Aesthetically, Anticon was always about putting out music that wouldn't have a chance. You know, creating a market for something that wasn't there, and putting out music we believed in, regardless of, like, not letting the market dictate what we think is valuable art. And so there's a number of criteria we would always have. The most important criteria was any lyrics on the record label that came out on the label had to be read as poetry. Like, if you couldn't read the lyrics without the music, then it couldn't come out on the label. And that's how it was. That's what it was started around. Since then, because I have ideological differences with the aesthetic and business choices that the label has made, I've since pulled out and renounced my shares to the company, but the movement that we started was really absolutely beautiful at the time.
I know it inspired a lot of people, and myself included, who were really looking for like a take on hip-hop that was, you know, just trying to be a bit more experimental and also quite political at times. And from the earliest days that I can remember visiting the Anticon website, I looked for it recently and it's not there anymore, but for a long time it had a, you know, like a vegan and vegetarian links section where people could find kind of all kinds of, I mean, there were lots of other links sections as well, but I'm wondering if that was, if the animal rights thing was kind of an ethic that was shared by the label as a whole, or was that something that was brought about more by you and a couple others, or what was the...
You know, in around that time, me, Nosum, Y, Alias, and Pedestrian were all vegetarians. And, you know, every real musician is down with vegetarian food. I mean, anybody who... You're not a real artist if you can't eat some Indian chana masala or something. But yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, honestly, I would say that was pretty much Nosum. Nosum, he was always a very big vegan. I don't remember how those links got on there. I'm pretty sure that was Nosum. I mean, we all cleared it, you know. I remember there was like an Adbusters link and,
right. You
know, some pretty simple stuff. But it wasn't like a share. It wasn't like you had to be vegan to be on the label. It just so happened most of us were vegan or vegetarian.
Something that I've heard you talk about recently, and it's come up in other interviews, is that self-sustenance is something that's really important to you. And now, you know, you've relocated from the Bay Area after living in Europe for a while. You came back and now you're living in the U.S. in Denver. And you talk about growing your own food and that sort of thing. And there's this graffiti on the bathroom wall at this venue in my hometown that says it's hard to be a farmer and beets are no exception, but beets is spelled as in like rap beets, let's say. But someone, you know, obviously wrote underneath beets as in the vegetable. So I'm wondering, you know, you've had this really intense DIY career and now you're kind of embarking on this other thing of being DIY and growing your own food. I was wondering if maybe you could reflect on why you feel growing your own food is important and how that kind of relates to your overall vision of how you do things.
Yeah, I'm looking at my garden right now. I'm really psyched to see my, you know, these heirloom Cherokee beans growing up the corn stalks, as I had hoped. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, it was always just something, my thoughts around it have changed a lot. I mean, originally, I was always imagining that the empire was going to collapse, capitalism was going to collapse, you know. So I always kind of had this buy a gun, stock up on grains and seeds, and go out to the mountains. And when I went out to the mountains, I realized that's not where I want to be. I want to be in a city. And for me, it's important on so many levels. One, because you just learn so much about plants, just growing your own stuff. You save yourself a lot of money, you eat better. You know, I think the problem with growing your own food and like getting into the whole, like, you know, it's like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like the kind of bourgeois veganism where you have your little backyard plot, and not everybody can do that. And I'm very lucky because I have all this free time and I can do whatever I want. And so sometimes when I'm more broke than others, it's like I'm paying myself by going out and growing my own food in my yard and weeding and picking this stuff. So there's like an economic reason why growing your own vegetables is, especially for entrepreneurs or people who don't work, is really important. You know, I can wake up in the morning, I don't have to have my food in the fridge, I can just go out, pull some arugula, pull some lemon balm, pull some beets, carrots, whatever. And it is important because the system could fall at any moment. And the food that we're, you know, the food I grew up on, it didn't matter if it was organic or not. But now people don't know what they're eating. I mean, are you eating a tomato, or is it a tomato crossbred with fish and pig, mm-hmm. you know, to make it tougher? And, yeah, I don't know. And just like, honestly, it's almost more of like a selfish, just fun thing to do, you know? Food tastes better out of the ground. It's like it almost doesn't even matter what recipe you're using, because if you're pulling vegetables right out of the ground, the way they taste is just so much different than if they've sat around for 3 days in a grocery store, you know? My other critique of the whole garden in your backyard is that, as a vegan, like, the thing I'm struggling with is protein. I tried to grow beans last year. I wasn't able to grow enough beans to have more than 4 meals. Mm. And so the real challenge with having a backyard garden as a vegan is really trying to produce my own beans. So I've lots of different, I'm growing my own soybeans. I'm growing a lot of different kinds of beans this time. And that's really interesting to me, to try to be self-sufficient. It's like an ideal. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, it's like a lot of my friends who have kind of backyard gardens, they've sort of formed this like collective barter economy where like one guy has a beehive, you know, one person's growing carrots, and everybody kind of like, there's like 8 houses involved in like this kind of hive gardening experiment, and everybody's, you know, sharing vegetables with each other. I'm a little less of a pure communist in that regards when it comes to food. I'm more interested in learning for myself and taking care of myself right now than trying to feed the neighborhood, you know? These skills that we develop, when it comes time to need to know how to garden, we're going to need to know. And if we don't know, if we're completely alienated from the earth and where our food comes from, we're not, you can't fight the power if you don't have any food, right? You know?
I was wondering, would you identify yourself as an anarchist?
Yes.
So how do you you kind of mentioned the class analysis around veganism and how it can really, in so many ways, be reduced to a kind of consumer choice. You just buy the right food and you're a good person, sort of thing.
Right.
So how do you see animal rights intersecting with your anarchism?
I mean, I'm just going to steal a bunch of stuff from Josh Harper and Scott Crow right now. Yeah. But basically, it's like, you know, I mean, the first thing is, you know, the prison industrial complex, you know, is very similar to factory farming. You know, every year, 200 billion life forms are wiped out. And I don't know who said it, but an injustice to one is an injustice to all. And if we're going to sit here and talk about police brutality and capitalism, I mean, these things are all so deeply, deeply tied together. And, you know, my arguments around tying anarchism in with animal rights, I mean, it seems very obvious. But I don't have that much of a nuanced opinion about it, I guess. I just think it's exploitation. Exploitation is murder, and we say it has to do with intelligence, but we're not that much smarter than a lot of the animals we're exploiting. I guess it just boils down to exploitation, and I don't know, my theoretical critical analysis of animal rights isn't that fleshed out, you know?
Yeah, I'm wondering maybe if now is a good time. I actually would really love to play the song that actually made me start thinking, maybe this guy is into animal rights. It's the song Theme from Live from Rome. And if you're able to stick around, we'll do some more talking after that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Everyone listening out there, you are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. I am speaking today with Tim Holland, a.k.a. Soul, rapper from the Denver area, a huge inspiration to a lot of us at the show, and creator and purveyor of great musics. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Oh. Refined sugar is white, cause it's processed through bone. In 5 years, all the meat you eat will be cloned. Whether you like it or not, someone in China died for what you own. As long as 1% control the money, water, and throne. Overweight fathers wonder why children stay stoned in $100,000 homes, or cause the breakdown when you pay off the loan. While rotten pilgrims wrestle in their graves, choking each other out on who gets to keep the loan. Got syringes on beaches, covered in layers of toxic foam. Millions will die for oil, and alternatives are known. Meanwhile, mothers learn to argue with their daughters and Jenny Jones. You give them 40 hours a week, time's the only thing you own. You spend 8 hours working, other 6 on the phone. Thinking it's bad to masturbate, but it's worse to be alone. And at that point, you might think everything you know is wrong. While the news says stay scared, old women stay home. Little girls get birth control pills, boys get G.I. Joes. It's effeminate to be sensitive, so strive to be Capone. As long as you go to heaven, it's okay to be a drone. Drink another animal's milk, it'll give you strong bones. The emperor implies evil with stereotypical racist tones. Kids grow up with attention deficit disorder, cause intelligent people get hyperactive in radioactive zones. We're understimulated, so the child gets sent home. Now the social worker recommends a head examination. Father got health benefits, cause safety's a concern. But the shrink gets kickbacks from pharmaceutical firms. Baby's mind has turned to mush, and now we'll never write a poem. Every 5 minutes, another multitasker is born, with its eyes glazed over, staring out into its new tomb. Ready to join the workplace, cause the child's taking it strong. $500 a week, then give a third to the throne. There'll be no records or ticket stubs when voting goes electronic. The only thing democratic is they pick who we bomb. While bombs are dumb, we could've bombed Ariel Sharon. Too many kids are reading, so they bombed the Terradone. CNN plays the fiddle while America burns. Just play the hear but screaming, play the hear but screaming, play the hear but screaming. Life from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes, cause our tears need home. Life from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes, because our tears need home. Life from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes, because our tears need home. From Rome, ain't nothing wrong.
You are listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. On today's show, we are speaking with Tim Holland, a.k.a. Soul. That was a song by Soul from the album Live from Rome. The song was called Theme. I'm really, really excited to have Tim on the program. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I would just like to point out that that song was recorded about 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's... I was actually just texting with Lauren as she's in a different city right now, and we were both saying, you know, we have so many good memories of that song. Like, it's been around for a long time.
It's funny. I just remember, it's like every time I hear me rapping about the 1% in like 2002, I'm just like, told y'all, you know. It's so funny.
When I asked you about anarchism, you mentioned Josh Harper, and Lauren actually did a fantastic show with Josh Harper probably close to about 10 years ago as well on this program. And it was about animal rights and anarchism. And I was wondering, who were some of your other animal rights inspirations?
You know, I mean, honestly, like, I've never, like, read a lot about animal rights. I mean, you know, obvious choices like KRS-One, beef, what a relief.
Right.
When will this poisonous product cease? Books, like I said, like books like Charlotte's Web, even the movie Babe. Anybody who watches the movie Babe and can't cry. Gandhi. I mean, I don't really have any influences on animal rights and veganism. It's just something I always just felt. And I was never exposed to activists or activist communities, not even when I lived in the Bay. I've just always lived in like this weird hip-hop bubble.
Right.
And it wasn't really until a couple of years ago, I started making friends with people from kind of like the Shaq campaign. For those who don't know, Shaq is Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. It was a very successful, awesome campaign a couple of years back. And those things, you know, inspired me a lot. Just like kind of talking to those people, like kind of snapped me out of my non-willingness to put my veganism in the forefront, because before that I just kind of felt like I was always really turned off by the way a lot of vegans would treat non-vegans. Mm-hmm. And so I never wanted to be one of those preachy animal rights vegan people.
Yeah, and that's something that you talk about in the song My Veganism, which I feel like is one of the, you know, I feel like I can count on maybe two hands the number of, you know, non-preachy animal rights songs out there, you know, maybe a bunch of stuff by Propagandhi and, you know, a couple songs here and there. And my Veganism off your new album, No Wising Up, No Settling Down, really hits that as well. And it's a really honest statement about where you're at with that stuff and why it's important to you. But it also seems...
Let me just interrupt you. Also,
sure.
I mean, now that I think about it, about 3 years ago, I read this book by Jason Herbal, I think this is his name, and it's called Fear of an Animal Planet, mm-hmm. The Secret History of Animal Resistance. And I think, I mean, that was the book that really just, like, snapped me back into... Okay, like, sure, we can fight against the police, we can fight against capitalism, we can fight against all these things, but we can't forget about our animal brothers and sisters, you know, it's brutal. I mean, we can't ignore this.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
No. I mean, that Lauren has also interviewed Jason Reibel on the show, and we've had him on a couple times, and Fear of an Animal Planet, I think, was... in some ways one of the most slept on kind of AR books of that year and of that sort of time. I mean, it's such a powerful document of the things that happened to captive animals and the way that animals are punished for, you know, resisting and the ways that animals just resist in general. And yeah, I mean, I could definitely see from where you're coming from how that would be a huge influence. I guess what I was wondering about the, you know, your choice of putting animal rights more at the forefront, at least with this one track, is, you know, why do that now? I guess you kind of alluded to, you know, you've been talking with more people and feeling a bit more comfortable in doing it, but how did you approach sort of doing it in a way that didn't feel preachy or cheesy to you?
The thing is, I've always just, like I said before, I've always just been this musician in my bubble, reading my philosophy books and just like trying to like imagine the world like the poet on the ivory tower or something. And I just never believed in activism. It always just felt really futile to me. And then when Occupy happened, I had to be in the streets. I just couldn't sit back and have Denver not be fighting the fight. I saw it as like a huge opportunity for radical change, or at least radical sentiment. And so I got really involved in that. And then through that, I started just meeting all these activists, you know, and I'm like, if anything happens in Denver now, I'm involved in it. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed is I don't have any vegan friends. All of my friends are anarchists and activists and Marxists and socialists and, you know, whatever, but none of them are vegans. And it blows my mind. And, you know, we all hang out and they all understand animal rights, but it's like, it's just like, it's not on anybody's radar. I mean, at least in Denver, like, there's tons of vegans everywhere, but the vegans are at protests. The vegans are completely lifestyle consumer vegans here. Mm-hmm. And I don't see any intersectionality whatsoever between the vegan community and the activist community here, and I think that that's a problem everywhere. And so that's why I started talking about it, because I really started fleshing out, you know, my thoughts on it. And after I read that Jason Herbal book, I was like, all right, this is crazy. And so that's why I just started doing it. And that's why I made the song My Veganism, because it's literally about my veganism. Mm-hmm. Like, I also recognize that, let's say, industrial civilization does collapse, and we're forced to live off the land. If someone has to go kill a deer to survive, I'm not going to judge them for that, no more than I would judge a Siberian tiger for eating a gazelle or whatever. Mm-hmm. So to me, the biggest problem is just the massive scale industrial farming and the waste involved with it, and... you know, people are starving all over the world, and we're throwing away half of the animals we slaughter every year because it gets lost in transit, and it's insane. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make a song that kind of like puts veganism in a new light. Because anytime I've tried to talk about veganism, someone is always telling me, you're preaching, don't tell me, one of the things I've really started to learn about since I've been engaged in on-the-ground activism for the past 2 years or so is how to communicate with people that I don't agree with and how to kind of lay these ideas out in a way that doesn't make people just instantly shut down, but kind of like engages their more human side so that people actually think about what it is they're doing. It's like, that could be your dog that you're eating right now. That could be your cat getting a bolt pushed through its head while it watches the 30 cats in front of it get a bolt through the head. And in fact, if we were in China, it would be your cat or your dog. So I think it's good to have like a firm stance on these things, but it's also important to understand the other side and learn how to communicate these ideas in a way that's not like, you know, what kind of shoes are those and that lipstick, you know, which... or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think we've all kind of, especially for a lot of folks listening to the program, and including folks who, you know, aren't necessarily regular listeners of the program who may be just hearing this in their cars, you know, there is that sort of cliche of the preachy vegan and the person who's just insufferable in their opinion. And I think a lot of people strive for a different way of delivering things. I wanted to ask you, because I've followed your music for a long time, and a couple years ago, yeah, like when you did get involved with, you know, the Occupy stuff, and as you're saying, more on the ground activism, it also kind of coincided with a shift in your music to what you were calling at the time the sort of rap as journalism thing. And that reminded me a lot. I remember when I was really young and growing up, and so many people were decrying violence in rap lyrics and the kind of imagery that was in a lot of rap lyrics in the late 80s and early 90s. I think maybe it was Chuck D or Professor Griff or somebody like that said, you know, rap music is the black people's CNN. Mm-hmm. And the issue of race, you've talked really explicitly and honestly about being a white rapper. And it's interesting to me that one of the critiques of the animal rights movement as well is that it's a predominantly white movement. And I think in North America, that's probably true. I think in other parts of the world, it's probably not as true. I mean, I think the animal rights movement in, you know, say in China is probably much less white than it is here. And that's something that we've tried to talk about on the show quite a bit is, you know, looking at the global animal rights movement. But I'm wondering if you could reflect on the intersection of race and veganism, rapping. I know this is kind of an abstract but also very broad question, but I'm wondering what your thoughts would be on that.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, obviously, as a white rapper, you know, I grew up getting beaten up by black people for being a better rapper than them. My relationship with race is so complex, and I like to confront privilege, but I'm not basking guilt, because white guilt, I think, doesn't help either. Anyways, that's a whole nother thing. Right. But, yeah, I mean, I understand that critique, but it's not, I don't really know how valid it is. Like, the cheapest food in the world is vegetarian food. If you can buy 5 pounds of organic beans for $5 and cook them at the beginning of the week and make a million different things in them, people are just lazy with their food. Of course, it does boil down to a class issue, because it's like, let's say you're a person of color in an inner city where, you know, where all there is to eat down the street is McDonald's, and then you go to 7-Eleven and there's not anything that's not made with sugar. You know, all this food that's readily available to people who are not as privileged is the least healthiest meat. It's meat. And, you know, a lot of those people, they don't have the time to sit there and soak beans for 12 hours and cook them and store them. But really, it's a cultural shift, and people haven't learned how to cook vegetarian for themselves, how to cook vegan and be healthy. And so, how can a white rapper intervene in all of that? I think just by being honest and honestly talking about race and class and exploitation. And does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And I know that it wasn't, I mean,
it's a very abstract question.
My question wasn't, it was barely a question, actually. It was just a few different thoughts floating around that I was hoping you could comment on, and you did. And I guess it's one of those things, I guess, that myself and the other people who work on the show, we've gotten a lot of questions about similar things, and it's good to hear your thoughts. And another, something that we talk about a lot on the program is sort of, you know, language and rhetoric, and, you know, that the language that people use is important. And, you know, you've made a career of words. So a few people wanted us to ask you what you thought of the use of the term pig as a slang term for cop. I ask that seriously because, you know, I've always, well, not always, I, you know, there was a time before I had an animal rights sort of analysis that I wouldn't have thought it was a question at all. But I think it's an interesting question to pose because pigs are one of the most oppressed species on the planet, and cops are some of the most oppressive people on the planet. And to compare the two has really struck me as a kind of odd thing to do. And I can't think of specific instances where, you know, the use of the word pig in your songs might have come up in that sense. But I do think of a song like Napoleon from your last album with the Skyrider Band, and how it's a kind of different take on that. You know, the chorus talks about pigs, and it's this kind of like Animal Farm-esque allegory. So I'm wondering if you can reflect on that term and how it gets thrown around, and if you think it's a question that should be posed.
Yeah, well, first of all, Napoleon, that song Napoleon is about the animal farmization of Anticon Records. That song is literally about what happened to the label for the most part. As far as calling cops pig, I don't know if I've ever called a cop a pig in a song. It's certainly something I think about. You know, it's certainly stuff that gets raised. Like, a lot of, even my non-vegan friends are like, pigs are awesome. Why would we want to compare them to cops? And, you know, it is problematic. But again, like, when we talk about language, a lot of it has to do with, you know, meeting people where they are. So it's like pig, I mean, for better or for worse, and this is horrible, but it's like when some kid calls a cop a pig, they're not thinking of pigs, you know? They're not thinking of an animal sitting in a pen about to have its guts ripped open. They're thinking about trying to knock this cop down off of a ladder. And I guess we just need better slurs for cops, because other than pig, I can't think of any, like, what? You know, that's what people call cops, pigs. And, you know, it is a problem. Again, though, I mean, and I don't mean to be insensitive, but it's like, I think a lot of activists get so caught up in their own language that they're on another planet to most people. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, if you're going to sit there and yell at kids for calling cops pigs, you know, when you were asking me about rap music being CNN for black people, like, I made a conscious decision to change my format to be a more quote-unquote popular format that could communicate better. Mm-hmm. And when I think about artists that communicate these ideas well, someone like Immortal Technique pops into my head, who is an amazing artist that has been able to educate and radicalize a lot of kids who otherwise would never have been radicalized. And he uses misogynistic language at times. He uses homophobic language at times, you know, patriarchal, I mean, but it's like, the result is that he's meeting people where they are and advancing the overall dialogue, even if we don't agree with everything that is said. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying it's the way it is. I think it's important to talk about that, but I don't know. I think it kind of misses the point a little bit, you know? I mean, it's a good point to make, but I don't think you're going to score any points in the streets with that argument, you know? Unless we can come up with a really, really good chant, which I think is really worthwhile. Like, cops ain't pigs and pigs ain't cops. Pigs are smart and cops are not. I mean, I'm gonna pull that out. You know what? We're doing a rally at a zoo on Thursday for a man who was killed by the police this week, a year ago. So I'm going to bring that chant out this week to insert the respect for pigs out of our distrust of the police, you know?
I wanted to, you've really been connected to a lot of on-the-ground stuff in the last couple years, and obviously the biggest news in the U.S. right now is the verdict in the Trayvon Martin case. I mean, cities all over the U.S. have had demonstrations. I'm wondering, this is unrelated to animal rights stuff, but if you wanted to give your thoughts on the Trayvon Martin case, and then we could head out with a song.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously it's the whole thing about it being this huge spectacle, I think it really misses the point. The point is that in America, if you park your car, follow Blackie's home, and shoot him, you're not going to go to jail, whether you're half Mexican or a wannabe cop or whatever. But to me, the most terrifying aspect of this is reading the responses by white people who feel totally, like, encircled or something right now, and they're, like, internalizing all these very weird semantic points about what is happening, and they're not, like, looking at the overall systems of oppression and how black people are treated in this country. And, you know, like, every white person right now is saying, it's not me, or let's not make this a racial issue, you know, or it's not about race. And it's like, well, tell that to the thousands of black people who get killed every year by police. And so I think, like, there's a chance that this is, like, you know, one more nail in the coffin as far as America is concerned. But it's like, from Snowden to the women's reproductive issues to this, it's like the conditions that gave rise to Occupy are so much worse now. And I just wonder, like, what's it going to take? But again, to me, the most disheartening thing about all of this is just seeing how so many white people and, like, fans of mine and hip-hop fans are just refusing to, like, look at privilege. And it's disgusting, and it makes me really sad. And the only other point I'll make about this is we actually had quote-unquote community leaders called for this rally, and everyone thought it was going to be a march. So 1,000 people went out under the MLK statue, and, you know, we listened to preachers. At one point, a preacher said to the crowd, I want to talk to the Zimmermans. I want to talk to the pedophiles and homosexuals. We were all like, oh, my God, what did he just say?
Mm-hmm.
And then their answer to all of this was to collect money and send it to Trayvon Martin's family for legal funds. And I was sitting there like, why are we collecting money? He has pro bono lawyers. His family has pro bono lawyers. I don't like to spout conspiracy theories, but I think there is a well-coordinated effort by the American government to, like, manage the rage over Trayvon Martin and confuse the issue. And so I think it's really interesting to see, like, quote-unquote community leaders in Denver, you know, not willing to take any sort of action whatsoever. There was no march. We didn't shut down the city. We didn't do anything. You know, I went out to that march, like, we all went out, we were all ready to get arrested and throw down, and instead we just listened to speeches and hate speech, and it was just crazy to me. So I don't know, the Trayvon Martin thing is so sad, it's so messed up, and I just hope after everything is said and done, after all the dust is settled, I really hope this really brings the conversation about white privilege to the forefront in a really meaningful way. Because what I'm seeing now is disgusting.
I know that's a heavy note to end on, but unfortunately we are out of time. And actually, I think that's a great note to end on. Tim, you've been a huge inspiration to me musically and otherwise over the years. So a really heartfelt personal thanks from me and from Lauren and from a lot of Animal Voices listeners. Thank you for doing what you do. And thank you for being on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me, and much love.
We were going to go out with My Veganism, but on account of the last question, I'm going to play probably 30 seconds of I Think I'm Noam Chomsky, and then if you want to check out more music, go to soul.bandcamp.com or soul1.org, and Listen to more soul. Tim, thanks so much again, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Peace, brother. Thank you.
You were listening to Animal Voices on CIUT. Stay tuned for lots more programming.
Yeah. You know what? All you fucking George Mason University graduates, fucking valedictorians, fucking boyfriends in the army, fucking bitter ex-pants.